Thank you very much. Well, I'd like to start by thanking Fields for the invitation to come here. This is one of the first trips I've made to Toronto, so it's been quite excellent so far. So I've got a bit of a shortened title up on the slides here, on the screen here, but as Alma just said, it's going to be talking about solution structure and traveling waves in lattice differential equations. So fortunately for me, Dimitri has just convinced you all that lattice differential equations are important, and they're interesting, and they possess these interesting dynamics. So I'll be glossing over the motivation a little bit, perhaps, but I approach lattice differential equations a little bit differently than the approach you just saw before, where you can look at it as being a discretization of a partial differential equation, for instance. When I was first introduced to them, it was actually using them as a ground-up way of modeling certain systems, in which case you can actually pass to a PDE as an approximation in the continuous limit, but I sort of came at it from the other approach. So once I've discussed a little bit about lattice differential equations, I'll then talk a little bit about traveling waves, why they're of interest, and then I'm going to sketch out a new method which I developed during my master's that allows you to obtain traveling wave solutions using a numerical approximation. So I'm not going to be doing much theory today. It's mostly going to be talking about numerical methods for solving these kinds of equations, with the motivation that this is a pretty new field, and a lot of the time, well, not a lot, but there are instances in which the numerics along with the analysis have kind of gone hand in hand, in which one can sort of further the progress of the other. So I'll give a little bit of a taste of how hopefully this can lead to that. So just to begin with, I just consider very general lattice differential equations where you have a lattice variable I, you have the dynamics taking place there, so V could be a vector, a scalar, whatever. It's just given by some function that depends on other lattice sites. So just down here, I've just sketched out a quick little example. You can have complicated terms that depend very far away, so n can be a big number relative to the lattice dynamics here, but basically something of this form, just an infinite set of ordinary differential equations. So to make some progress and to simplify some notation, I'm going to make a few assumptions on this lattice differential equation. I'm going to assume first that it's translationally invariant, and what that means, it'll become clear in another slide, but basically means that the dynamics taking place at a lattice site I are the same form as the ones taking place at different lattice sites on the lattice. I make an assumption that there's no terms of this form, so that you don't have a nonlinear interaction between the lattice sites at, say, I minus 1 and I. This is just a notational convenience. You can actually have that. It's no problem whatsoever. But with these two assumptions, it allows me to write that arbitrary lattice differential equation in a nice form like this, where I have the dynamics determined here as being a summation over some sort of neighbors to the left, some sort of neighbors to the right, and some sort of arbitrary function of the value of the lattice at that position. So just to give a couple of examples, so here's two different sets of lattices. Focusing on the left, we have a linear lattice here in the lower part and another linear lattice here in the upper part, and you can imagine some sort of reaction dynamics maybe taking place in which you have interactions between this lattice site and its two neighbors, and maybe some sort of cross-coupling here, in which case I'm sort of assuming that this distance here is different than this distance, so there's different types of dynamics taking place. So when I talked about translational invariance on the previous slide, what I'm talking about is that the form of the dynamics here is the same as the form of the dynamics here. This guy also depends on its two neighbors and the one across. That's just what I mean by translational invariance. So as another example, you can imagine a square lattice in which there's nearest neighbor interaction plus some sort of on-site dynamics taking place. So this is the kind of dynamics I'm going to be focusing on today. These are diffusion-type interactions, which are different than the ones that Dimitri had up with dispersive-type equations. So to sort of illustrate what our new approach basically does, I'm just going to use a case problem. And in discrete reaction diffusion equations, the case problem is the discrete Nagumo equation. So this is basically a discrete version of the Nagumo equation, which you may be familiar from the Fitts-Nagumo equations that are studied quite often in PDEs. And so basically you have a linear lattice here that stretches off to minus infinity and plus infinity, and you just have simple diffusive dynamics taking place here, along with some sort of function that does some sort of reaction term at the lattice site. So this is nearly identical to the equation you just saw probably 20 minutes ago, except I don't deal with the lattice spacing H. I just assume it's, or sorry, I rescale it out and then call it a forcing term beta. So this is playing the role of a 1 over H squared that was present in the previous presentation. So basically what beta does is it determines the relative strength between this term here, that's going to be the diffusion term, and whatever forcing might be taking place. So it's commonly done in the Nagumo equation. This forcing term takes the form of a bistable nonlinearity, so a cubic function. And so this is derived from a potential where you have a potential well at 0, a potential well at 1, and as you vary this parameter A, the relative heights of the two potentials change. leading to different types of dynamics. So I've talked about lattice differential equations so far, so now why talk about traveling waves? So if you do a direct integration of a lattice differential equation, which is what's shown here, and you can't see it. here we go. Yeah, this is a finicky thing about Windows, I think. Okay, I'll show it again. So along here we have the lattice variable I, and then here's 0 and here's 1 for the variable V. And I just start from some arbitrary initial condition and just start integrating it forward in time, and this is this solution structure that it assumes. So you can kind of see it starts to look like a traveling wave. This isn't peculiar to the discrete Nagumo equation. You actually quite often do see these in lattice differential equations, so it kind of begs the question, well, maybe traveling waves are important in these types of equations. So in order to start studying these types of traveling waves, well, you could integrate the ordinary differential equations I just did, but you run into the problem of the wave leaves your computational domain. So it's hard to start trying to analyze the structure of these traveling waves. So what we do, just like in PDEs and as you just saw, you introduce a traveling wave ansatz. You introduce a traveling wave coordinate, which moves at some speed c, and then a traveling waveform phi. Applying the chain rule substitution into here, you end up with an equation like this. So I've only got one derivative because I'm dealing with a reaction diffusion equation. But basically, it has the same sort of structure. You have shifts present, and then you have some sort of nonlinearity present here. And as Dimitri remarked, the variable zeta is in the real numbers here. So in general, I'm dealing with non-zero wave speeds, so you have a discrete variable I, but then this ends up coupling in here, so you end up with a real variable zeta. So I'm going to spend a bit of time focusing on how we start to deal with this. So my idea here is I want to try to do some sort of numerical approximation to compute a solution to this equation. This is problematic. This is almost an ordinary differential equation, but you have these darn shifts which make life a lot more difficult. So this is a mixed-type functional differential equation, which is very difficult to analyze. So we begin by looking at constant solutions to this equation. So if you have a constant solution, these terms cancel out. You have no derivatives, so you're just looking for the zeros of your potential. And as I just showed the potential earlier, you have three zeros, 0, a, and 1. And it turns out if you analyze the stability, these two are stable and this one's unstable. So when we're talking about traveling wave solutions, we're looking at ones that connect two stable points. And in this case, I'm going to be looking at kinks, ones that connect 0 to 1. So you have some sort of traveling wave moving through your lattice, and it's going from one state to another state. So now how to begin trying to address these delays and advances. Sorry, shifts is probably more appropriate since this is a spatial variable potentially. But basically the problem arises if I just want to do a naive way of trying to maybe discretize this derivative and try to do some sort of approximation numerically, if I want to know the dynamics, the derivative, in some sort of finite range, say minus 1 to 1, it's problematic because due to these shifts, I actually need to know the solution over a bigger interval. So how do we come around this problem? So it's just pictorially here. You want to know the dynamics here, but you have to know your solution over a bigger range. This is a reinforcing problem. So we make use of the fact that we have assumed some structure on the traveling wave. So we've assumed that it's going to be connecting 0 and 1. So that means if we go far enough out in our new variable zeta, the traveling coordinate, we know something about the solution. It's going to be near 0 or near 1. So to then try to solve the problem, we linearize. So here I've just linearized the cubic term here around the stable solution 0, for instance. And you can introduce a characteristic solution leading to a transcendental equation for the roots, which you just saw earlier, except it was a cosh, not a e to the lambda plus e minus lambda, but same kind of equation. So we can approximate the solutions of this equation and obtain fundamental modes that approximate the solution here about 0. So what we end up doing is we take finitely many of these modes and approximate the solution. So throughout this, I'm dealing with approximations and numerical techniques for trying to solve stuff, so we just end up taking one of these routes in the current implementation, but you could think about using more if you wanted a more accurate solution. No, that's true, exactly. So for C not equal to 0, these are all bounded away from the imaginary axis. And so what this ends up meaning is that to know the dynamics here, we can actually just approximate the solution out here using these analytical approximations, and so knowing the solution here over a finite domain, we can actually determine the dynamics here by using these approximations. So that's fine. This has been done in the past. What ends up being a bit of a problem is that the solution... So this equation here, this still ends up being quite difficult to solve. So you've taken care of the problem that you can approximate the solution outside of some region of interest based on using these linearizations, but The problem is it's still quite difficult to solve. And in particular, you generally need to have a very close guess to the true solution in order to apply some sort of numerical method to try to solve it. So what we ended up doing is, okay, so don't assume a traveling wave ansatz. Assume a traveling coordinate. So this is a little bit more general. So what we do now is we introduce a new coordinate x, which is same sort of form to this zeta before, but then we allow the solution to still evolve in this new coordinate frame. So there still is some time dependence. I should have maybe called this tau to introduce a new variable technically, but by relabeling t and tau, it ends up being the same thing. So by assuming this traveling coordinate, we move with our wave, which is a problem before in studying it because it ran off of our lattice. But now we allow the solution form to still evolve in this new situation. And so if you do the substitution into this equation, you end up with this partial differential equation with shifts in both with shifts in the x variable. So as I just said, it solves the problem of having the wave run off the computational domain, and it allows more general solutions since we can allow the solution to actually evolve in time with this traveling coordinate. Now, why is this advantageous? Well, if you look at the two formulations, so before I had a traveling wave ansatz, and now I have my new formulation here. If you have a fixed-point solution of the second formulation, so that there's no time dependence, then just get rid of all these t's, call x zeta, and you have the exact same equation. So by finding fixed-point solutions of this problem, you actually recover solutions to this problem with the same wave speeds. Sorry, let me go back. Okay, so now the problem you're probably saying is, well, can it possibly be easier to solve this equation than the previous one? I now have a PDE, whereas before I only had one derivative. So it actually turns out that there's a nice property about this equation, which I'll get to in a second, but first let me just introduce the discretization. So I'm focusing on numerical methods here. So to try to solve this PDE, well, a standard way for solving a PDE numerically is you use the method of lines. You introduce a computational domain in your x variable, and then you discretize it. So I approximate a derivative here by this discretization. I can handle these shifts because I know approximations to the solution outside of this finite domain based on my linearizations. And what I end up doing is I end up rewriting my entire partial differential equation here in this discretized form as being a system of ODEs. So it seems kind of funny. I've kind of come full circle. I started with a lattice differential equation. I did a bit of a song and dance. And now I ended up with another set of differential equations. The difference here, though, is that this is a closed system of ODEs. So whereas before I had a system that was spanning over an entire infinite lattice, I've introduced some new variables, a new discretization. So this doesn't have to do with my lattice discretization. This is due to this method of lines. But at the end of the day, I've come back to a set of ODEs, which is nice. We like ODEs. They're easy to analyze. Well, not easy, but we can use many methods to analyze them numerically. So at the end of it, I'm going to leave the formulation of the discrete Nagumo equation now and just write down a general function f. So I've done all this using the discrete Nagumo equation. You can do it in more generality, but at the end of the day, you end up with something of this form here. We have some vector of unknowns, which define our solution in the traveling coordinate frame at these discretized points xj, and it's just given by some nonlinear function. For xj, no, it's generally smaller than 1. And generally speaking, that's because you have these shifts here, so you want to have something smaller that can actually capture the shifts. So I'll make a brief mention. So a lot of the work in the masters was actually developed showing that this is actually a convergent approximation. Your method can actually converge. We constructed solutions that we knew the solution for, so you could study different discretizations and such like that. So at the end of the day, it seems that this is a good method for trying to approximate these solutions. By taking this lattice spacing, or not the lattice spacing, the discretization small, you end up recovering the true solution. So I'm not going to present those results just due to time constraints. So I've now come down to this problem here. Now, I mentioned earlier that if you have no time dependence in your solution, then you've recovered your traveling wave. That's when I had that partial derivative go to zero and you had the two same equations. So now there's two ways to try to end up finding this fixed-point solution. First one is that if we know the traveling wave is asymptotically stable, which sometimes you can determine based on the lattice differential equation using some analysis, then for an initial condition that's close enough to the actual true traveling wave, this will go to zero as t goes to infinity. You will converge onto the asymptotically stable traveling wave, which is exactly what you saw in the lattice differential equation that I integrated there. My initial condition happened to be close enough that it actually converged onto the traveling wave. Another alternative is to actually just set this equal to zero and solve for the fixed point, solve for the actual time-independent solution. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about using some dynamical systems analysis tools to actually solve or to investigate solution structure in this problem. So as I said, it's wonderful. We just have a system of ODEs. There's been a lot of theory developed, a lot of numerical methods. Otto comes to mind specifically, which is what I kind of base my analysis here on. But you can basically study the solution structure for any of these parameters. So I've gotten rid of my vector, so I'm now going to consider just one parameter varying here, alpha. But you can use a pseudo arc length continuation method to solve this problem. So this is a bit of a messy equation. What this really comes down to meaning is I have my parameter alpha. I have my solution u, which I'm projecting from whatever dimension it happens to be down onto just being one-dimensional. And I have some solution curve present here. Using one of the two methods on the previous slide, I somehow find an initial solution. So whether that means I evolve it in time so it's asymptotically stable and I find the fixed point solution, or I just actually use Newton's method or something to find it, you can then use pseudo arc length to follow this solution curve. And so what's written here is a system of equations that basically ensures that you're actually going in a tangent direction to here. So delta S is some sort of step length. So you start here at the nth step, and you take some sort of step delta S in a particular direction, which is determined as being a tangent to this curve, and then you approximately try to find the solution here. This is, loosely speaking, how pseudo arc length continuation works. I can discuss more with it later if you'd like to go over the details. But basically, the idea being that you can actually follow this solution curve along and actually determine the different solution structures as you vary a parameter alpha. How much time do I have? A couple minutes? Oh, good 5 minutes. Jeez. Okay, I can slow down a little bit. Sorry, I'm rushing through here. So to illustrate how this works and some applications of it, I was just going to pick a couple of applications that we ended up doing in my master's thesis. So here, I'm going to look at a different potential than the discrete Nagumo equation. It's actually a triple well potential. So here you have three stable states. There's one at zero, one at a half, and one at one. And then we have two parameters, B and A, which end up varying the locations of these two intermediate unstable solutions and end up changing the relative heights of the well so that you end up with different dynamics trying to propel the lattice from being in one state to a different state. Otherwise, the exact same structure. So in this case, having three stable states, we can look at three different types of solutions. So schematically, we can look at solutions that end up connecting 0 to a half, 1 half to 1, or possibly some sort of combination that ends up connecting 0 to 1. So the analysis for the 0 to a half and half to 1 waves is actually straightforward. It's actually analogous to the Nagumo equation, because if you have a wave that only sees 0 to a half and you have a triple well potential, well, it actually only sees the bistable portion of it. It only sees half of it because it's not actually going, sees this half of it. So it's not actually going outside of that range of the potential well. So for the range, the waves that connect 0 to a half and half to 1, the dynamics aren't terribly interesting. We kind of understand them based on looking at the bistable potential. But the 0 to 1 ones are actually quite interesting. So I'm going to go through this plot and try to explain everything in here. So basically what I'm showing here are equicontours of wave speed. So along any one of these contours is a wave that exists and it has the same speed the whole way along. And what I've shown are four different contours for four different wave speeds. So I've got 0.1, 0.01, negative 0.01, and negative 0.1. So these four horizontal lines here, and that one right there, are solutions that connect, let me get this straight, 1 half to 1. And then the four vertical lines here are ones for 0 to 1 half. And then these ones here are the ones that connect 0 to 1. So initially you might not, well, at least I didn't actually understand why you wouldn't see solutions that would be present throughout the space portrait. Why is it that there's only certain regions where you can actually have these waves existing that connect 0 to 1? And so the reason why is that if you have this wave here that's 0 to a half, say it's traveling this way with a wave speed that's negative, and suppose you have one from 1 half to 1 that's traveling in this direction, in a positive direction, then if you try to look for a solution that matches 0 to 1, you can't actually find one because these two waves end up splitting away from each other. The parameter range you happen to choose, though, so for instance, that situation I just described occurs down in this quadrant here. You have positive wave speed for the upper one, negative wave speed for the bottom one, and they split apart, and you can't actually find a solution that connects 0 to 1. So when you're not in this region, And in fact, if you're above this dashed black line, which is actually the curve along which these two waves have the same speed, so they're moving at the same speed, these two component waves, then anything above that, you do end up finding solutions that connect 0 to 1. So this is sort of to illustrate there's some, I would call it rich structure here that you may not think about, or sorry, see from just an analytical or looking at the actual equations that were underlying it, but we can start to see based on using the solution continuation method. And this picture is trivial to generate on even on my laptop, which is quite slow. It just takes about 30 minutes to generate, and you just start it at a solution and it just runs and finds all the structure, which is one of the nice features of using this continuation method. So in my last 30 seconds, perhaps. So there's also another problem of interest, which we looked at, which is the triangular lattice. So in this case, so far, I've only been talking about one-dimensional lattices. And solution structure, just like in PDEs, when you go to higher dimensions, gets much more richer when you go to higher spatial dimensions, even just in lattice differential equations. So in this case here, I'm looking at the dynamics as being a diffusive-type term based on its six nearest neighbors. So the lattice ordering here is that these diagonal lattices are the jth coordinate, and then these vertical ones are the ith coordinate, allows you to label this lattice. And then there's just the standard bistable potential, so I'm not looking at the tristable one anymore. So, to explain this plot, this actually might take a little bit longer. So what I'm showing here is called a region of propagation failure plot. So what happens in these lattices is that there's actually non-zero intervals of the parameter A, which if I can just remind you what the bistable potential looks like. So the parameter A determines the relative height of these two wells. So in a continuous PDE, there's only one value of A for which you get no propagation of your wave. It's when the wells are the exact same height. Then there's no way for anything in the left well to move to the right well because there's no gradient between the two. However, in a discrete equation, you actually find out that there's non-zero intervals of A that prevent propagation in the lattice. And so this kind of has to do with the actual discrete structure between the lattice sites. There's something that stops the wave from propagating even when you do have a slight gradient between the two potential wells. And what you find further in a two-dimensional lattice is not only does it depend on the height of the wells, but also depends on what direction you're trying to travel with the wave. So here my angle theta is measured relative to this line here. So when you're traveling directly towards your nearest neighbor, so if you have a plane like this, traveling in this direction here, then you find out that there's actually a very wide or large interval of well separation that prevents the wave from traveling. And so this interval of propagation failure depends a lot on the structure of the lattice underlying, or the underlying lattice. And so this is just kind of of interest because this is actually kind of at the same time. This was discovered for a square-dimensional array, not the triangular one, but this motivated a proof by Jean-Marie Perret that you can actually show that this curve is actually discontinuous at certain angles and continuous at different ones. And so based on the analytical and some numerical analysis, it kind of motivated hand-in-hand doing some theoretical analysis of this problem. Yes. Exactly. So not just small, but when it's near a half. So a half is my normalization, which makes the wells the same height. But exactly. So this is, sorry, I should have oriented it. It is a polar plot here. So this is the angle theta of the propagation direction. And then so here, you have a very small range of A that prevents propagation at this particular angle. And then here, you have a much larger range. So just to conclude and wrap up, so I hopefully have shown you that this new method allows us to find a lot of solution structure in these lattice differential equations. The nice part about it is that it's very hands-off, I guess you could say. You just end up using this method to explore the solution structure, and it's not a lot of hassle, I guess you could say, to try to find these solutions. And this new formulation is nice because you end up with an ODE to solve, as opposed to this mixed functional differential equation. I'd just like to conclude by thanking NSERC for funding me during my master's and Tony Humphreys, who was my supervisor at McGill during my master's. Thank you very much.